This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and thank you for joining us. Welcome to the Total Saints podcast, our weekly get together discussing all things Southampton Football Club. We're live streaming our podcast on Facebook, Twitter, Twitch and YouTube. And if you're watching on YouTube, make sure that you subscribe to the channel to be the first to see the new videos. As always, a massive thank you to our TSP patrons who support all of our work. You can visit patreon.com/Total Saints podcast to find out more about getting involved. Coming up on the pod this week, 19th versus 20th in the Premier League. A chance to close the gap on a wet Monday evening in Nottingham. We're going to look back at the Forest game and another disappointing result on the road. And next up, the penultimate home game of a sorry season, Fulham, the visitors this weekend. We will preview that game for you. My name's Martin Stark and I'm joined this week by Steve Grant, who is the owner of Saints Web. Glenda LaCour is the writer of the blog League One Minus 10 and Alfie House is the Southampton reporter at the Southern Daily Echo. Underpinned by our TSP patrons, this is episode 232 of the Total Saints podcast.
Your home for everything Southampton FC, from dedicated Saints insight to exclusive interviews. Live on YouTube every Sunday and available to download wherever you listen to your podcasts. This is the Total Saints podcast.
Now, if there was a small glimmer of hope, it was extinguished on Monday night at Nottingham Forest. 4-3, the final score. A frantic game. Glenn, I'm going to start with you this week. It wasn't to be, but for once, it felt like they gave it a bit of a go.
Yeah, they did. They did give it a go. There was more attacking intensity in that performance on Monday than we've had all season. Basically, there were, you know, people flying forward, and we were, you know, keeping the ball in their final third, in the final third sort of thing. And you know, looking a threat. We created a couple of chances in the first sort of 20 minutes. Shea Adams had one blocked. He should have taken first time. And then, of course, the first time they punt the ball forward, our defence, just dereliction of duty, basically, from mainly, I think it was down Maitland-Niles' side and Bellacott-Chap in the middle, it was just marking space, basically. Good goal straight through the hologram in goal. So that was one that was good. Great goal from Forest's point of view. You know, really, really good break, really incisive play. But we didn't defend it well. And you still think, oh, we've started okay. The team on paper don't look too bad. And then we're 2-0 down with our next attack, which we had three or four chances to clear. And Bellacott-Chap just gets totally beasted, if you like, by the big centre forward. Smashes it in the net, 2-0. And then, because it's a game we've got to win, you know we're screwed. But as with Saints have done all season, they do just enough just to keep you interested. So we get back to 2-1. Again, you know, winning the ball, decent bit of play to tee up Stuart Armstrong to tee up Alcaraz to score. And you think getting at half-time 2-1, and you never know. But then Maitland-Niles takes over again. Bit unfortunate to give away a penalty, but it's... yeah, it's one of those. I mean, I knew the referee was going to give it. And basically, you can say, yes, he's booted his... At the end of the day, he's kicked his foot and he's gone over. But it is unfortunate. And I have sympathy if you try and argue it another way, but I'm not remotely surprised it got given. And of course, it was never going to be overturned. So 3-1 down at half time. And I watched the second half just sort of laughing at bits of it, really, because, you know, we're not going to win from 3-1 down at half time. But again, we did it again. We got a goal back, didn't we? And again, that was the time when we really needed to push on. But before we could do that, we let in another one. And then 4-2, could have been 5-2. But it just seemed like every time Forest attacked, they looked like they were going to score. But neither fullback looked interested in defending, to be honest. That Walker Peters had a dreadful game defensively. Lianco was a massive improvement on Bella Kochap, which wasn't hard. And Maitland-Niles was just hilarious, both defending and with the ball, playing this. What was it? It was a bit like a tribute act, wasn't it, to Manchester City with the left back turning up in the centre of midfield. But unlike Manchester City, he just found several different ways to give the ball away. It was just atrocious. And, you know, what do you know about tribute acts? Most of them are crap. And that's what happened. You know, master the basics. And that's my one criticism of Ruben Selles from yesterday, because I didn't think his starting lineup was that bad. You know, it was okay. But trying to overcomplicate things when we can't do the basics is the main thing. You know, we just can't do it. We're our own worst enemy. And getting beat 4-3, I think it flattered us a little bit in the end. So I think Forest were always in control of the game. But yeah, it's just I find it a shame that we're still in, you know, we're still looking at Fulham, the Fulham game, saying, oh, we can win this. I just want it to be over. I've just had enough.
You just want the R next to the...
Yeah, and I just thought to say fair play to everyone who went up there for that game, because it's a tough thing to do. At the moment, going to a place where there can be absolutely zero expectation going into it, so to go up there and watch that, get beat again, travel home, go to work the next day, that's a tough shift on a Monday night. So fair play to everyone who went.
It's a long way to go, Steve. That's three times we scored three goals and not won a game. It was the lack of quality again that's let us down. We're talking about the same things every week, but it was plain to see. If we'd have scored four, they'd have scored five.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for stealing the stat that I was about to use as well.
but yeah,
it's one of those, isn't it? Where I mean, on the face of it, you look at that game and you kind of think, well, actually. I mean, on a given night, actually, you probably win that game, given the quality of chances that we created. You look at the stats that we had possession in good areas. Forest basically just did us on the break, three out of the four goals, really. And yeah, it was just infuriating that was exactly how we knew they'd play, and we still fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. And I mean, Steve Cooper must have gone back into the dressing room at half time, absolutely himself, thinking how the hell have we managed to mug them off like this. But I mean, in truth, I mean, as I say, we played okay. We were all right for the most part, and it's not a performance like last night that is the reason we're going down. It's all the other ones where,
yeah, if that was August or September, we'd be all right with that, wouldn't we?
Yeah, August or September, you take the positives from the game in that created a lot of chances. There was a fair amount of enthusiasm, a good bit of pace to our game for a lot of the time, which I think the conditions helped. Wet weather always makes the game a little bit faster. But yeah, we've got to the point now where the performances really don't matter in the slightest, and results are the only thing. And once again, we've not got the bit that we absolutely needed. As you say, earlier in the season, you can take a defeat like that and say, well, on another day we win that game, and it's not too bad. If we keep playing like that, we'll win more than we lose. But actually, if you defend like we did against basically the second worst team in the league, against the good teams, then you will still lose every game. And that's kind of what we've been doing for the most part when we've been playing under, well, pretty much all three managers, really. I think we were probably a little bit more organised under Ralph, but circumstances just didn't fall the right way. And I think in the end, everybody wanted the change. I think probably even Ralph himself by the end of it. But I mean, we're coming now to the end of a season where it's going to be all change again. And it's now a case of when do the board decide they're going to make the announcement. Because clearly there's absolutely no way that Sellers can stay on. I mean, it's noticeable that his song has basically not been sung for the last three games, now that people have finally cottoned on to the kind of disaster that that it's turned out to. But yeah, there's a lot of soul searching and a lot of action to be put in place ahead of the summer, because make no bones about it, though, the Suits have got a fair amount of work to be getting on with.
Yeah, you'd like to think they've started some of that now. Alfie, you were there yesterday. There was clearly a plan in place, because you spoke about it on Friday and we saw it. You know, they started well, they were pressing, they were hassling. But again, they just don't seem to have the players to execute the plans. And it was the same old mistakes again.
Yeah, I think Steve and Glenn have touched on the major points. Team selection-wise, I think everyone was pretty happy at 7 o'clock. And then, you know, quarter past 8, everyone was really happy. They were on top for the first 15 minutes. Che Adams was looking pretty lively. I don't think he really touched the ball again after the first 15-20, but he had a couple shots on goal, and you thought, all right, they're there for the taking. And like you said, it was just on the break twice, and all of a sudden you're 2-0 down in a game where the atmosphere was phenomenal, by the way, to be fair to them. The City Ground, they have this great song at the start, and Steve Cooper has his own song, which apparently gets every single week as well, and they're a team that's fighting relegation, and they, you know, they are behind their team, and I think that made it harder for them. But yeah, I think you guys will have seen it, obviously, more than I will have and the old generation, but how many times are we going to sort of see these interim managers come in? I think Steve actually retweeted something I posted and saying, you know, this is just standard for an interim manager to come in, get a couple of results. You know, it was one goal conceded in Sellers' first four games. I think it's 23 in the nine that have followed utter carnage. And yeah, they have created chances. They've created a lot of chances, to be fair. But we spoke to James Ward-Prowse after, and aside from asking him about his future, which, you know, we tried to do and we didn't really get definitive answers because they're not going to. I think the one thing that he said was absolutely clear is that the experience isn't missed necessarily on the pitch, it's just in the dressing room. He keeps making reference to this. Every time Ward-Prowse comes out for interviews, he keeps making reference to the fact that he really feels like he's lost his guys, I suppose. He thinks that, I don't know whether it's Nathan Redmond, Ori Romeu, whether it's Jack Stevens, Fraser Forster, I imagine, is a big part of that as well, being so close. He feels that he's lost his leadership group, his friendship group, and I think he really feels that that's probably the main reason they're in the situation.
It was the first time, Glenn, in about 35 games that we were quite happy with that starting lineup, and the bench was looking decent as well. There were some attacking options as best we have on there. You know, it wasn't a bench packed full of defenders either. So I thought we might nick it. I honestly, when we sat down, I thought this might be all right. We might get a point here.
It's too little, too late. Yes, I agree with you. You know, it's the first time I've looked at the 11 names and thought, oh yeah, I can. I mean, I assumed that Maitland-Niles would be on the right and Walker Peters on the left.
Yeah.
So, but I actually think it was a positive move to do it the other way around, because you've got Walker Peters attacking, is more potent from the right hand side, I guess. I mean, it didn't really turn out that way yesterday, but I think that the starting lineup was decent. I think the first substitution he made when Bela Kochap couldn't be bothered anymore, I thought it was better to bring Lianco on than Chiletazar, because he's just a little bit quicker. And I think it would have been a disaster and probably a red card coming Chiletazar's way if he'd come on against Brennan Johnson. But I don't necessarily think yesterday's defeat is too much on Ruben Sellers. It's more on the players just not being aware. I mean, if you look at the first goal, Che Adams gives away a free kick in their left back area. They take the free kick quick. It's one pass forward to a guy, I think it's Gibbs White, who's not picked up. He turns around. He's got all the time in the world to put the ball over the top to Johnson. One pass, goal. It's just pathetic. It's about four or five players just not concentrating on what they should be doing. So, I mean, we did play well going forward, and it was nice to see us. You know, Stuart Armstrong's a decent footballer when he's got his mind in the game, sort of thing. Walcott has played reasonably well the last 8-10 games. Having Che Adams back was big for the first sort of 20 minutes, but yeah, I do wonder how fit he was. But we've got no one else to replace him with. You know, we've got no one who's of any quality at all to take his place. So, and we saw that in the second half with the round of substitutions at the end. You know, we were dead in the game by then anyway. But, you know, when you got Onuachu and Adam Armstrong coming on, you kind of know the game's up, sort of thing, don't you? So, not too many complaints from that point of view. But the damage has been done, and why? There seems to be a realization now that he has to let the handbrake off, because we needed to win all four games. Well, the time to let the handbrake off was 2 months ago, 2-3 months ago. But, you know, he won those couple of games against Chelsea and Leicester by, you know, being positive in the first half and then defending the hell out of it. We seem to have moved away from that from so many games, and we've been trying to win it in the second half. I don't understand it. There's been too many random selections along the way, you know, like Joe Aribo getting a game, and which is still amazing. You know,
was he even on the bench last night?
He was there, but he wasn't on the bench. Yeah. He was there. They're bringing him along to watch.
So it struck me a little bit as like a guy playing Football Manager and just chucking things in just to see if they work, sort of thing, without any real plan. So, but I thought, you know, if we'd have played yesterday's team for the last sort of 10 games, maybe we'd have got a few more points. But it's just infuriating looking at the rubbish that's down the bottom of the league and how easy someone's gonna stay up with probably 32 points. Mm. And there's so many poor teams this season, not just the bottom five. You know, when you can look at some of the teams between sort of 10th and 16th or whatever, there's so many poor teams, and it really wouldn't have been that difficult to nick, you know, get another three wins, you would have thought, to give us a chance of staying up. But yeah, too little too late yesterday, I'm afraid.
Just a word, Steve, on Belakotchap. I know he left the ground on crutches afterwards. Questions about his application. It just feels to me that maybe, is he not right for the Premier League just yet? Is it a bit too early? Was he expecting to play as many games? Or do you think his head's been turned post-World Cup?
No, I don't think so. Because, I mean, who is going to sign a player whose injury record is such that he's now been subbed off injured in four first halves in the season? I mean, I mean that must be unprecedented. And I think we can all see that the raw materials are there.
Yeah.
He's largely good in the air, apart from the occasional moments where he turns fairly weak, as he did a little bit last night. He's pretty quick on the ground, apart from times where he stumbles over his own feet and injures himself, like he did last night. He's reasonable with the ball at his feet. Like we saw at the start of the season, he was making these marauding runs through the midfield and taking a pot shot. I think it was against Leeds, wasn't it, where he took a pot shot from 35 yards and put it just wide. And you think, oh, hello, we've got something here. And he was obviously being looked at earlier in the season, hence he got his Germany call up. Although, I mean, arguably that possibly says a lot more about the quality of German defenders at the moment, that he's already in the senior national team setup. But yeah, I think there's raw materials to work with there. But ultimately, I don't think he played that many. He'd only played probably a dozen games or so for Bochum last season. So as a result, he's not conditioned to be playing a 40-odd game season. And Some people adapt to it really quickly. Others unfortunately don't. And I mean, he's been a little bit unlucky in that a couple of his injuries have been sort of dislocated shoulders. Which, I mean, doesn't matter how fit you are, that can happen if you land on the wrong area. But the sort of muscle injuries and the sort of fitness and stamina issues that seem to have been hinted at from Ruben Selles in a couple of press conferences and things like that. Yeah, I mean that's the sort of thing that is going to put other teams off signing him, which, I mean, I guess there's a charitable way of looking at that in that it's a positive for us in that we'll keep a player who's been highly rated at various stages of the season. But, I mean, he'll need to step up another notch if he's going to go a 46-game league campaign in the Championship next season.
Is some of this on players like Salisu to a certain extent, Alfie? Because if I think back to that first game of the season, it was Bednarek and Salisu, I think, were the two centre-backs. And you kind of go, all right, well, maybe that's the plan. And then Belakotchap was always going to be like on the bench or just a player that came in when we needed him. So when you've got players like that that are injured and aren't around and have seemingly checked out, you know, some of this, I think, has got to be on him, because players like Salisu should have been, they've been playing well and they should be in the team anyway. So the fact that we're even debating Belakotchap and how he got turned twice for the goals yesterday, just part of it just doesn't sit easily with me.
I suppose you say that, but I think when you go back to that game against Tottenham in August, I think actually we were all very surprised that Belakotchap was on the bench, and we sort of hounded Ralf Hasenhüttl for a little bit because he played every game of pre-season, didn't he? And he was good in pre-season as well.
I mean, Gineppo was wing-back game, was he? So it was, maybe take it with a pinch of salt.
But you're right. Look, we don't know what exactly is going on with Salisu. When Ruben Selles is asked, he's how can he have an opinion on an injured player? He's an injured player. I can't assess his attitude. He's injured, which is... Yeah, you know, it's a brilliant diversion. It's a really good way to not answer that question. But yeah, I think it's more about the the strategy, I guess, isn't it? With they've signed these really good players, and I think a lot of them, if not all of them, have broken down at some point in the season. You know, Bella Kotchab over and over again, obviously Remy Olavia for quite a definitive period, and what a period that probably cost Ralph his job, and Juan Larios won't play again this season. We've seen what happened to Tino with two different knee injuries. So these young guys, yeah, it's clearly difficult, isn't it, to play a 38-game season. Like Steve says, they've got to do it for 8 more games next season in the Championship. However, I think there's a good squad there. I do believe there's a good squad there, even with the maybe 9 or 10 players that will leave, 6 of those being players that will leave because they're good and 4 being players that will leave because they're not good. And then maybe even a couple more that will leave to Europe, like Orsic, Onuachi, maybe they'll leave as well. I still think there's a good squad there. I still think there's plenty there. And yeah, Glenn's just put a message into the chat. Remember who played? It was Jan Valery, wasn't it? It was Jan Valery who started that game.
Yes,
yeah,
of course.
Which is a mental decision, of course, when you look back at it. But yeah.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Glenn, I was just going to ask about that's the argument that we've seen that Alfie was just saying there. You know, there is some good players there, but they're not playing as a good team. Is that right? I mean, because I've been watching it a bit too closely, but I'm thinking maybe 2 or 3 good players. And yesterday, when that full-time whistle went, I kind of felt like if any of these leave, I'm not going to be upset. And I don't remember feeling that before. There's always been at least 1 or 2 players where you think, I don't want them to go. I'll be really upset if they go. But actually, to be fair, if any of them left tomorrow, I'd be fine with that. I'd wish them all the best.
I think you're looking at the squad and you'd miss Ward-Prowse, Walker Peters, Romeo Lavia. They'd be the main 3. Mm. Anyone else, I think I'd be over it by the time I'd finished reading about it. To be honest, by the time I got to the bottom of the page, it would be be interesting to see if anyone gets the Adam Lallana 2-line send off. Yeah, there's not many there. I mean, I remember when we nearly got relegated the season we won at Swansea at the end that season. I remember thinking the same thing. I was looking at the squad of players we've got and thinking, I think it was like Gabbiadini and Højbjerg. I think were
Charlie
the only
Austin as well.
Yeah. No, I mean, as in the only 2 players who I was thinking I'd be bothered if we lost.
If they went,
these.
You'd be upset.
Yeah. Because I can see something in those players. So, you know, the interesting thing for me is like, do you give players a chance who have been dreadful for the last 2 years in the Premier League? Do you give them a chance at a lower level? I mean, some of them, you're not going to have a choice because no one's going to want to buy him. But, you know, do you, for argument's sake, keep Joe Aribo in the Championship, who's done absolutely nothing in the Premier League? And that's what you've got to get your head around. Adam Armstrong is another one. Obviously, he scored a bundle of goals in the Championship 2 years ago. But for me, he doesn't look like a player who's going to score bundles of goals next year. He's the difference between a player with confidence and a player without confidence now. So there's lots of decisions like that to be made. And obviously, and I've seen it written a few times now by various different people, you've got to have people who want to be here. Mm-hmm. You know, if people don't want to be here, then get them out the door, because no one's that good. I mean, like Salisu clearly doesn't want to be here. And he has been a big loss this season, I think, because it gives you that natural balance, the left-footed centre-back. He is capable of having very good games. But no, if you don't want to be here, see you later. Try and get them out the door. I mean, there's the obvious ones, obvious question marks over the likes of Orsic, Onuachu. But the trouble is, we're probably paying them 10 times the wages they were on at the previous club. So they're not going to, you know, take Orsic, for example. Why would he give up, you know, say he was on $5,000 before, now he's on 50. That's a total guess, by the way. Why would he give that up? He's earned that, if you like. He's earned his move here, and it hasn't worked for whatever reason. Maybe it's his fault, maybe it's our fault. Why would he give that up?
I think Turkey's got quite a comfortable tax arrangement, shall we say, with with footballers. So I think that might be a popular.
But we've seen before how difficult it is to get rid of the dross, isn't it? It's all very well going right, but we want to get rid of him and we want to get rid of them. But when they're on the books and people aren't going to take their wages on and they might not want to leave, so it's really difficult. It might not be the rebuild that we want or need. In fact,
you'd like to wipe the slate clean and get rid of anybody who you don't think is going to sort of be up to the job, but it is going to be very difficult. And this is the point I made a couple of weeks ago. Sport Republic and the new manager, hopefully, and the director of football, they've got to start getting decisions right. In fact, forget Sport Republic. It's more about the manager and the director of football, the people who actually know about football. They're the ones who have got to make the decisions on the players and any players that we sign, they've got to be signed with the idea of building a promotion winning team, not signing some 14-year-old from Chile who we're going to sell on in 5 years' time or whatever. You know, we've got to start getting the priorities right.
And am I right, Alfie, did Sellers hint there is a plan for relegation and he was saying that we might hear more about that soon, or they're going to sit down and they're going to talk about it. And it seemed like they weren't going to maybe wait until the end of the season, I think, before the Liverpool game was mentioned.
He's been carrying out the plan for relegation.
Executed perfect.
I would hope that is the case.
But if it ain't broke, consider breaking it.
Well, let's not get into that. Yeah, that's... I think the reason I said it, there are good players there. I think people like Charlie Alcaraz will play in the Championship. I think you can field an 11 of Southampton without the likes of Joe Rebo and Adam Armstrong. You know, they're going to sign a new forward, I think. I think that's almost certainly going to happen, somebody who wants to score goals. But I was listening to Dean Hammond on BBC Radio Solent the other day. I don't know if anybody else listened in, but he was saying that they need to make these decisions early and get the players in early doors. But the problem is the rebuild's not starting on the pitch. The rebuild's starting up in the boardroom. You know, they've still got so many different positions to fill, so many people to find. And Jason Wilcox has got the biggest job he's ever had on his hands. Whatever date it is he starts, he's going to be very, very busy because they can't even think about the pitch yet. They've got no academy manager. They've got no recruiter. You know, they've got a lot to do.
And the departures probably haven't finished yet either.
There's going to be more to come.
So is that what you're... I mean, you've spoken about this, Alfie, as well, about Sport Republic. When is it that they front up and they talk about the mistakes that they've made and they talk about the plan to get back to the Premier League? Is that something that happens on Saturday when it's confirmed, or is that something you'd expect like day after the Liverpool game? When do they actually come out and answer some questions?
I do not know the answer to that, obviously. I wouldn't know, but I'd like to think that it will be... immediate, you'd imagine. And like you say, that they reassure fans that, right, it's actually over now. I can't believe it's still not over. That's the thing that Glenn said, and finally just ripped the band-aid off. We've been waiting since Forest in January. We knew that this was potential and it's still going on. But when it is, just accept it, get it, you know, tell people that it's going to be okay. This is what we're going to do. We're going to divert a bit of power away from who it has been for the last, 7 or 8 months. And we've got this new guy, Jason Wilcox, and we're going to trust him to make the decisions, like Glenn said.
Let's hope he starts. I can imagine him turning around and going, actually, do you know what? I don't fancy it. Steve, just on the final sort of two or three games, what is it you were expecting to see from the players? Are we going to learn about their character? Are we expecting to see who wants to stay? Or is it just going to be like a pack of cards that's going to collapse?
I mean, quite frankly, I've learned enough about their character over the last 18 months. I do not need to see any more of that. I mean, let's be honest, there's now going to be a certain amount of freedom. So actually, I think we'll see more games like last night. I think there'll be a lot of free-flowing attacking football because, hey, why not? There's no consequence now. Let's have a bit of fun, entertain the fans. Why not? Given that there will be some interesting season ticket numbers being released at some point in the next 4 weeks or so, I imagine. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot to take in, but ultimately the results now don't matter. So I fully expect us to probably take 7 points just to rub our noses in it completely. That would be absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, I mean, what else do we want to see? Do you possibly look at one of these games and put together an 11 who might still be here next season?
That's what I would do.
Possibly, but the problem is the teams we're playing against. Still, I mean, Fulham have got Mitrovic back on Saturday, haven't they? Which is, you know, he's scoring at least once. And then you got Brighton and Liverpool, who are still chasing European football of various standards. Mm. So, I mean, if Brighton turn in the sort of performance they turded out yesterday against Everton, then good Lord, we might actually win another game this season. But yeah, I'm not even sure what I want. It's one of those things where we've been so bad for so much of the season when we've had things in our own hands and there's been something to play for. It would actually be more annoying if we now suddenly decided, well, now there's nothing to play for. We might as well play some good football. I think that would be more insulting to the fans, I think.
I almost don't want some of the younger players, like, you know, Dom Ballard is an obvious one, but I almost don't want them to be tainted with this season. Kind of like just keep them to one side and then we'll bring them in next year and see how they get on. I don't know if you saw yesterday, there was a lad that threw his shirt on the pitch when he left early. There was a picture, I saw it on social media today. He actually emailed us. His name's Henry. And he said, I threw my shirt onto the pitch last night on my way out. Shortly after we went 4-2 down, I can't remember a time I felt more defeated, deflated and angry towards my football club. I don't
hold them wet.
Yeah, well, I'd imagine, yeah. He says, I don't earn very much money. I don't live in Southampton, so going to the football is quite a big commitment for me. The minimum I ask is that the players fight when times are hard. So I think that's a lot of people going to be kind of echoing those sentiments, like these last couple of games. Just turn up, put a shift in and show us that maybe you did care at some point. But the weekend is going to be a tough one, and it's Fulham next at home. As you mentioned, Steve, Mitrovic is going to be back after his 8-match suspension. So what have you made of them? Because it'd be 10th, aren't they, in the league? So they've done all right.
They've been very hit and miss since that FA Cup game where all hell broke loose. That mad 5 minutes was definitely one of those ones where commentators always take the moral high ground and say, oh, these are scenes we never want to see. And yet actually everybody watching absolutely wants to see this because it's hilarious and disgraceful in equal measures. And it was great entertainment. But I mean, since then they're not in contention for Europe now. I don't think they can sneak seventh anymore. But they've been up and down. They've kind of beaten the teams that you would expect them to beat. So they've gone away to Everton and won quite comfortably. They've beaten Leeds at home and they gave Leicester an absolute spanking yesterday. But it's one of those where they've kind of been able to, they've had enough quality in the team to beat the dreadful sides as all of the five down there are, but they've not really had anything when they've come up against pretty much anybody else in that period. I think Palinha is now injured as well, so probably their player of the season's out for the rest of the season, and as a result they're probably just gonna just sort of limp through. But I mean, let's be honest, if you'd have said the start of the season to any Fulham fan, you're going to finish 10th or 11th, potentially above Chelsea. They would have absolutely ripped your arm off for that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Fulham have kind of overperformed a little bit, even just from the games I've seen. They've lucked out a little bit, and maybe next season you get a bit of second season syndrome and Marco Silva's defensive sort of instability kicks in a little bit more. But they've been very good overall this season, and yeah, deserve their place, whereas we don't.
It was one of those games, Glenn, that little run back in January where you looked at that and thought, actually, this is one of those games we should be winning. I think we'd lost to Brighton, hadn't we? Then we went to Fulham, lost 2-1. It was James Ward-Prowse's free kick, wasn't it? And that was when we started to go, maybe this Nathan Jones guy, maybe he's not the one for us.
We lost in the last minute, didn't we, with a flick on and header at the back post. I remember exactly what I said after that game was that I didn't think Fulham were much good. And I still kind of stand by that. I don't think they're exceptional, and that's kind of what I was alluding to earlier on when I said the teams above the bottom five. I mean, I didn't realize Fulham were 10th, but that's exactly what I'm saying. The bottom half of the Premier League is really not great, so picking up points against the likes of, you know, Fulham, Crystal Palace, Wolves, it shouldn't have been as difficult as we made it. I didn't think Fulham played particularly well in the game that we were up there, and when we were up there, rather, but they found a way to win, and we, as is our want, found a way to lose, just with pathetic defending at the end. So, but no, fair play to them. I think, you know, like Bournemouth next year, they could well be bottom three next year, but they've had a good season this year, and they deserve to stay up. Absolutely, they were never going to maintain the European push, but as Steve said, they'd have snapped your arm off for the season that they've had, because they, I think they've been relegated the last three times they've been in the Premier League before this, more or less.
Them and Norwich have basically just been swapping places every year.
Yeah, Yeah, so yeah, so fair play to him. Hilarious that Mitrovic comes back against us. There was. I mean, it doesn't matter now. But I mean, there was talk.
Was Lianco marking him? I'm trying to think who we put up against him in, because he would have played in January, wouldn't he?
Yeah, it was Lianco.
Yeah, could be an interesting one on Saturday.
This Serbian connection, isn't it? So it'll be it'll be interesting to see if they go for that again. But I would imagine. Well, it would be Lianco or Chiletazar that will come in for Bela Kochap, assuming that we've seen the last of him. And I can't see Salisu coming back. So, yeah, that'll be an interesting thing to look out for. But I agree with what Steve said. I think this will be quite an open game. I mean, the players, even if they don't believe it themselves, they've got to go into the game thinking, well, we have to win this one, which of course we do. 9 points and beyond or whatever we are. So we have to go and win it. So, why not go for it? And I think we'll see a fairly attacking performance again.
There is this strange situation where we might win but still end up being relegated, I think, on Saturday. So we could put in the game of the season and it still wouldn't be enough. Alfie, what are you expecting from the atmosphere at the weekend? Because it's just, I mean, you've been at all the games, but it just seems a bit flat. There's that sort of acceptance almost at the end from the fans. And that was a little strange at the end where the players just went over last night and they're just like staring into the abyss. It dawned on them, hadn't it? And I don't think they really knew what to do.
Yeah, that really was weird, wasn't it? I mean, I don't know if anybody was in the away end, but I spoke to a few people, and I think the general consensus was half of the away end were clapping them, stood up, you know, sort of applauding them. The other half were giving them a little bit, I guess. So I think it might have been a bit of a weird experience, but I think it was probably the moment where all the players realised, if they hadn't already, somehow that, all right, yeah, we failed in our mission here. And yeah, it was weird. I mean, it's looking at it, and such a long time just staring at their supporters. I think it would be an interesting atmosphere.
Was it that nobody wanted to go first? Nobody wanted to be the first one to sort of turn their back and walk away?
Well, it's usually Remy Lavi is the last one that turns his back and walks away. I think he actually left quite early. I think he's feel a bit overwhelmed by it potentially. Yeah, it'd be an interesting atmosphere. The atmosphere, look, St. Mary's hasn't been the fortress, obviously, that anyone would have wanted to be in this season. And when you see sort of the starts of games like Forest and the way they get up for it, it's, you almost wish that you could do that a little bit, but it's so hard when you haven't been given any encouragement on the pitch at all. I mean, the worrying thing is that I'm reliably informed that Fulham will still be up for it, because I think they've got some not real accolades to chase. I think they're 6 points off their highest ever Premier League points total, which they want for some reason. I think it's 53, they've got 48. If they get six, they'll guarantee it. And six will also guarantee that they finish above Chelsea, and they've got Southampton and Crystal Palace and United left. So they'll probably see this as one where they can really sort of tick that off, and then they've got two goes at it. So yeah, it'd be interesting. It's been a shame. I'm looking forward to St. Mary's next season. I hope that if in the end the Championship start winning some more games, I think it'll be a bit more lively, and there'll be a few less the day trippers. I see Steve's face there, but a few less day trippers, and a few less not Southampton fans, a few less Big Six fans in the home end, and you can start to feel that connection again with the club.
Momentum is a word which keeps coming up, and it has done in the comments tonight. And I saw someone with a very fair point today, was if we're going to be promoted next season, we need to win best part of like 28 games. So it's going to be quite the turnaround of the team, the character and the mentality if we're going to bounce back. I want to do score predictions for this, because prior to this game, I was thinking, oh, it's going to be another 1-0 defeat. But I'm not sure now, given what Alfie said about how much they need the points and they want to finish above Chelsea. Mitrovic coming back, the pressure probably being off, maybe, you know, if we approach it the same sort of way. Steve, I'm going to come to you first for your score prediction. If you're watching live, by the way, you can put them into the comments, and it's always good to see what you think as well.
Yeah,
I mean, goals.
Yeah, I mean, as I said earlier, the pressure's off, so therefore they'll turn up and play with freedom, and everyone will have a great time, and we'll be kicking ourselves and wondering why they didn't bother doing this back in December. 3-3.
Nice. Oh, what a game.
Nice.
What a game it's going to be. Glenn?
Similar, but not quite as mad. I'm going to go for a 3-2 win. I know Fulham are saying...
Win.
3-2 win. Yeah, come on. I hear what you're saying about Fulham chasing accolades and trying to finish by Chelsea and mid-table. Players won't give a rat's about that. They know they can't qualify for Europe. They won't give a rat's about finishing above Chelsea. They'll give a rat's about where they're going on the beach. Fulham have next to nothing to play for, so they're just as likely to phone it in. But I think a combination of that and Saints having the pressure off and having to win, I think we'll go for it again like we did against Forest, and just hopefully we can defend a little bit better. 3-2 win.
All right. And Alfie?
Yeah, I think the Fulham players will fancy a few extra quid in their pocket for winning, a few extra goal bonuses perhaps. I think that they will win 4-2.
4-2. I've seen a few 4-2s in the comments, actually, and a couple of 4-3s as well. So we're predicting goals, which...
Nailed on nil then.
Yeah, he's not wrong. Well, we'll be back to dissect that game. That's pretty much it for this week's pod. Don't forget, you can follow us. It's Total Saints Podcast. You'll find us on Facebook and Twitter at Total Saints Pod. You can get in touch via the website. You can drop us an email during the week. It's always lovely to hear from you, especially at this end of the season. We're going to be getting everybody's thoughts on how it's gone wrong. Totalsaints.co.uk is the website. You'll also find us on Patreon. That's where you can support the podcast with the monthly contributions. It's patreon.com/Total Saints Podcast. Different tiers on there, of course, ranging from £5 to £20 per month. And each of the tiers comes with those different perks, including the weekly shout outs for those patrons in the Francis Benali and the Mick Shannon tier. So thanks, as always, to Dave Melton, Mark Atkins, Matt Hall, Andy Hollis, and Anthony Thompson in the Francis Benali tier, and also to Colt Baker, Dave Ernsberger, Ed Busy, Nick Higston, Phil Cook, Matt Rose, and Nick Reed in the Mick Shannon tier. Thank you, Steve. Thanks to Glenn. Thanks to Alfie. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you again next week.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.